What was the code name for the Switch?
The NX.
Really?
Yes.
What was the code name for the Wii U?
Cafe.
Really?
Yeah. Project Cafe. It's Games Turning On.
So I definitely caught the PAX box, but I caught it from someone at work. Because when I left PAX, I felt great. But everyone in my office was sick. And then come Thursday...
Did they go to PAX?
Yeah, pretty much. We got the day off to go to PAX.
What?
I mean, what? We're a video game studio.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
We also got the day off to go see Captain America Civil War.
That's not video games.
We make a Marvel game.
Ah, that is video games.
Yeah. But yeah, so, this is a week since PAX. I'm still dying. NyQuil is a miracle drug, though, I'll tell you that much.
I tell you what?
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 Anyway, but yeah, I don't know, I actually saw a bunch of interesting stuff at PAX this year, which, not that I'd say that's weird, but I normally kind of avoid seeing stuff, but people kept recommending it, I go check stuff out.
Trying to think. So I actually had a lot of fun at PAX, even though I couldn't go on Friday, because, like, I had the tickets, obviously, long in advance, but I just started a new job the week prior, and while yes, I could have done the thing where I say, like, oh, by the way, I need to take a day off, you know, pre-existing commitment, like, my new job is my old job, and it was basically, you know, me.
I mean, it's just, yeah, PAX comes 4 times a year at this point. Like,
yeah, it's not even that, it's more like, yeah, you gotta make a good re-first impression. Like,
my point being is that, like, oh no, I missed a day of PAX is not, like, you know, when PAX was 1 day a year...
Missed 2 days because I would have gone down Thursday. We would have played board games at your apartment on Thursday night. Then we would have had all of Friday. So I missed out on like 2 days.
Yeah. Well, you missed 3 because you didn't do Sunday board game either.
Yeah, well, that was also I had to get back because Becky's parents are in their, like, they were on vacation. Normally they go on vacation in February, but they delayed it because George was born. And, you know, it was her alone with 2 babies. So it's like, come on. You know,
we stayed till like 11.
Oh, yeah.
More games on Sunday.
Again, I originally intended to take Thursday, Friday, and Monday off. I had a hotel for 4 days. I was going to get there Thursday, and it was just going to be a 4.5, 5-day nonstop climax of gaming.
I feel like you should probably never describe it like that, but alright.
How would you describe it?
I would say it's a... I don't know. Yeah,
that's an accurate statement. That's what
I finally played Euphoria.
Isn't Euphoria good?
It's really good.
The key is to shoot the people trying to read books.
Yeah, that does help. Well, actually, the real key is to be the one that everyone wants to gang up against, so that they fight each other to be the one ganging up against you.
And then actually, every time
smooth sail.
Every time I've played Euphoria, I always do the single card strat where you just try to rush the, like, star pieces, the ones in the board, so that everyone else who's busy, like, putzing around with their inventory says, oh great, now I gotta get in on that, otherwise I'm not going to be in on it and I'm gonna be blocked out.
Like, you're referring to building buildings.
Yeah, building buildings. You build buildings so fast that you just inconvenience everyone else and they have to build the buildings in order to keep parity, or they get those horrible debuffs.
Right, no, exactly.
You self-debuff yourself with the whole one card, because, you know, what do I care? I'm not burning books nor reading books.
Hey, what do you mean one card? You mean like
your inventory is, like, you're not your inventory, your hand size is based off of whatever that one stat
is.
Oh,
that's what you mean. Yeah. Hearts and minds. Yeah,
hearts and minds. No hearts, no minds.
I had all the hearts, no mind, and was in every building. I feel like you're doing something wrong there, Chief.
I think you were playing against people that were bad.
Playing against the same people you'd be playing against.
No, actually, I would play that down at Long Island Board Games. So, like, Zach, Alicia, Stefan, Al.
So, you know, when I played against Al both times.
Yeah, Al? Okay, Al's everywhere. But, like, you played against Paul, too, right?
Well, Paul's never played before.
Yeah, exactly.
But neither had I.
Okay, you play a lot more board games than Paul.
It's actually not true.
No, that's totally true.
I mean, lately, I used to play... There was a time where I was playing 10 to 12 hours of board games a week, minimum. Now it's like 2, if I'm lucky.
Yeah, Paul's like 1 board game a week on like a Friday or Saturday.
Either way, it's a very good game. I kind of wish I'd kickstarted it, but I didn't. I instead kickstarted Civility, Build Your Own Dystopia, or something. I don't even know if it's... when it finally came, I never even opened it. Because it took like 2.5 years longer than they said. And I was just like, by the time it arrived, I just didn't care.
That's Kickstarter right there.
I'm fine with... I'm willing to give up to a year leniency because it's Kickstarter. Like, I totally understand. 2.5 years is a completely unacceptable number.
I guess.
2.5 years is a really long time.
You know, I've been burned by Kickstarter, so at this point, I don't trust it. Like, I look at Kickstarter not as a guarantee of something, but more of a, this is a cool concept, I'll throw money at it. If it pays off, great. If it doesn't pay off, oh well.
That's supposed to be what Kickstarter's for, but it's become just a place to pre-purchase stuff.
Yeah, well, that was my problem. I thought it was a place to pre-purchase stuff, and now I see it as it should be seen.
Right, but now it's become a place of pre-purchase because everyone else who got burned said, oh, I'm only going to kickstart people who have been successful in the past, which is counterintuitive to the idea of Kickstarter, which is to give people who have no other means a place in which to kickstart their project.
It's almost like the free market kind of solved this problem, and people are trying to go against the natural order of things, and the natural order of things isn't artificial. It's like, the natural order of things is the way it should be, is the way it is because of the way it is, if that makes sense. The reason why only people that had pre-existing stuff got funding from big publishers is because that was the only guarantee you'd have of success.
Right, but the whole, yeah, I don't know.
The whole idea behind Kickstarter was that, oh, well, we'll give away for those other people to get funding. Guess what? There's a reason why they weren't getting funding.
Right, and all the people who... And all, like, the small success stories are people with enough tenacity that didn't matter.
Yes, exactly. Like, it's, if you're going to be that guy that you spend a couple hours a day, every day, for 3.5 years on your pet project, then, you know, all the more power to you. I happen to know things like that, because I've been working on my pet project for, like, almost 3 years now. It's pretty close to being done, though.
Yeah. Back to PAX.
Yeah.
Did you play that snake game that Al is super into?
No, I saw him play it. I'm like, okay, yep, it's a snake.
It's a physics-based platformer where you play as a snake. So you have to coil around stuff and like grip and just use the physics of a snake to navigate the environment. I thought it was really clever. It's coming out on the Switch.
But, I mean, it's a snake.
I mean, what is anything? Yeah, Mario the plumber. Like.
Yep, it's a platformer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's probably why I'm super jaded and nothing interests me anymore other than... I guess now the Shovel Knight expansion is going to be... That's going to be pretty good.
But it's just a dude with a shovel. What are you doing?
No, actually, it's not a dude with a shovel. It's a dude with a scythe. It's the expansion where you get to play as a...
Scythe Knight?
Not a Scythe Knight.
That's when he plays like Death or something, right?
It's Spectre Knight.
Spectre Knight, there you go. Yeah. Spectre you played Knight? Is he a private eye?
No, Spectre. Like, it's Spectre Knight.
I think it would be funny if he's also an inspector.
No. You played Shovel Knight, right?
A little bit.
Oh my god, Shovel Knight was my game of the year it came out, and then the Plague of Shadows expansion was my game of the year it came out. I fully expect whatever the name of the Spectre Knight expansion is to be my game of the year this year. In fact, it might even be my game of the year over GuyQuest.
I don't think you're allowed to rate your own game of the year.
Of course you are.
I don't think I've ever considered what my game of the year would be for any given year. Although I would probably just put Devil Daggers for all of them.
You know, if you want, I can start CCing you on the game of the year email that I send to Billy each year.
You send Billy a game of the year email?
Yeah.
Yeah, please CC me on this. What was your game of the year for 2016?
There actually wasn't a game of the year. Everything was so bad, I just complained about everything and said there was nothing good this year.
I don't believe you. I have to. Oh god, 2016.
2015 was Spectre Knight.
Okay, so hold on.
Or not Spectre Knight. Plague Knight. 2014 was Shovel Knight. 2013 was DuckTales remastered.
So 2016 saw the release of Overwatch, Dishonored
Didn't
2,
play it.
Doom,
Didn't play it.
Civilization 6,
Didn't
the
play
Hitman
it.
Episodes, Pokemon Sun and Moon.
Oh my god,
Pokemon
Sun
Go,
atrocious.
XCOM 2,
Didn't
No Man's
play it.
Sky,
Didn't play it.
Deuce X for people who like it, Stardew Valley, Super Hot, Darkest Dungeon, World of Warcraft Legion.
Oh my
Hyper
god.
Light Drifter.
I think Legion was my. If I had to pick a game of the year, I think it'd be Legion. That's
not
how
Stardew
bad
Valley.
It is. No.
Not Super Mario Run.
What? The mobile
not
game.
Super Hot.
No, a mobile game is not going to be my game of the year.
Are you saying that mobile games aren't real games?
I'm saying both. Not only are they not real games, they're also bad.
Actually, I hear Super Mario. I don't have an iOS device, but I hear Super Mario Run is very good.
They are both bad and not real.
What?
Yeah, they're that bad.
Do you realize like 100% of video game money is in the mobile sector, right?
It's not 100%. It's like
40%. You realize that mobile determines how games are made these days.
I'm aware that the vast majority of people are. Vast majority of developers are focusing on the mobile because that's where the money is. Because rather than make a game and sell it to people on a console or on a PC, you can just try to fish for whales, and when you catch that one whale, you make far more money than you're.
Except Super Mario Run was a one-time purchase of $10.
Yeah, and how did it do?
Amazingly.
It sold well?
Yeah.
That's disappointing.
That they sold a good Super Mario game on mobile and it did well?
Yeah, I was hoping it would do poorly, because then it would teach them not to make mobile games.
But they made a good mobile game, from what I understand.
Okay, but now that they made a good mobile game, now they're gonna...
make more good mobile games? I'm failing to see your complaint here. If anything, the success of Super Mario Run proves that companies can make games like this and avoid the microtransaction, like gacha box.
I mean,
and then they don't fish for whales anymore, and then we get good games on mobile because you can just buy them.
You know what? One does not make an example, so we will see.
But Nintendo makes an example.
Nintendo does not stand for quality the same way they used to.
So not only do we have Super Mario Run, but we also have Pokemon Go, which is an insanely successful Pokemon game. What do you mean it's bad? You haven't even played it.
I don't need to play it. It's bad.
Anyway.
Do you play bad things? That's like...
No, I don't play bad things, but I did play Pokemon Go. So,
you
know, it's so facto.
You do play bad things.
Coming from the person who got beat by 10-year-olds. And anyway, back to PAX, I guess, because you don't understand anything else.
Nope.
I did almost get trampled this year, so that was interesting.
Oh, yeah. I heard that story. Why would you need to beat by 10-year-olds? The person I lost to was an adult.
All right. I'll believe you this time.
And it's actually funny, because, so there was a Pokemon tournament. I lost to Extreme Evo Boost. EVZ move. I knew about EVZ move ahead of time. I knew that it was one of those gimmicky things like, if it gets you, it gets you, but if you don't have a counter for it, you just lose to it. But no one was actually running it in Pokemon Showdown, so I couldn't really test it. And, I just kind of assumed, like, alright, maybe I can just power through it. I couldn't just power through it. And it was unfortunate. I lost, so when I went home, I made an Extreme Evo Boost team on Showdown. Played 7 consecutive games, won 7 games. I'm like, my god, this is the gimmick strat for me. And then proceeded to lose a good 15 or 20 in a row. Like, it was just losses for 2 hours after that point. Maybe not 2 hours, maybe like an hour and a half, an hour. And I'm like, wow, this is actually a really bad team. And the one thing that got me was I lost to an Arcanine that used Roar. And I suddenly realized, oh, I can make a one-move adjustment on my team and completely counter Extreme Evo Boost. And it helps out with countering Trick Room. So I changed up my team, and sure enough, I then played an Extreme Evo Boost team on Showdown. Just like, oh, nice to have this kind of practice ahead of time. Roared him, completely shut him down, and it's like, alright, So, you know, I know for VGC.
What does Roar do?
Roar forces your enemy to switch out. So Extreme Evo Boost is Eevee's Z-move. Eevee, as in the unevolved form. It gets +2 to all stats. So +2 attack, +2 defense, +2 special attack, +2 special defense, +2 speed. You say, oh wow, that's big. It then, uses Baton. So first turn, you have like a redirector. Distract, like use like Follow Me to draw in your attacks. So you can't attack Eevee the turn it uses Extreme Evo Boost. Second turn, it uses Baton Pass to switch out before you can attack it. And it switches into something, like a real attacker. In which case then, you know, you lose, because this thing now has double defenses, so it's going to be taking basically half damage. It's got +2 attack, so it's going to be doing x2 attack, and usually it has a move like Stored Power or a Power Trip, which does damage based on the number of stat boosts you have. So at +10 stat boosts, you're looking at like a base 660 power move, the equivalent of 4.5 hyper beams.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, so it's very good. Except Roar forces your enemy to switch out, and it can never miss. So the turn that Eevee uses Baton Pass, you Roar that slot. So they Baton Pass, and when you Baton Pass, they keep all their stat boosts. But when when you get switched out by Roar, you lose all your stat boosts. So they switch in and immediately bounce out, lose their stat boosts. You can only Extreme Evo Boost once per, like, battle, because it's your Z move. So the end result is, you know, they blow their setup and then they completely lose it. And Eevee's completely useless other than setting up the Baton Pass. The redirector is a Clefairy. It's completely useless other than shielding Eevee for 2 turns. So they really only have half a team. In which case then, you've gotten rid of their stat boost, and GG, the end. They now are, it's now 2v4.
That's assuming you hit with the Roar. They
Roar
don't...
cannot miss.
No,
they change it in 6th gen, so it literally cannot miss.
So you always follow the Z move with the Roar, right?
Yes, because they are always going to Baton Pass.
They're but not they don't Baton in. Pass.
So you mean like they protect instead of Baton Pass?
They do anything else, I don't know.
Well, Eevee doesn't have attacks. Even at +2 everything, Eevee's really weak. It's an unevolved form. Like, if it stays in, it will die.
Is there any way to stop a Roar?
No. In 6th gen, they changed Roar and Whirlwind so that it cannot miss, it cannot be immune, it 100% always hits without fail.
So it doesn't even matter if they're going to Baton Pass or not.
Yeah, actually, no, it can be blocked by Protect. That's about it.
Okay.
But if they don't Protect, like, whatever happens,
then Baton Pass.
Then next
you just follow
turn,
with another Roar.
Yeah, Roar has 16 PP. Eventually, you're not going to protect, and I'm going to Roar you.
It sounds like a really dumb team.
Yeah, it's a meme team.
You're just gambling that they don't have a Roar?
You're gambling that they don't know what to do, because, yeah, it's a game.
Well, even if they know what to do, if they don't have Roar...
If they don't have a Roar, there's other things that can stop it, too. There are people that would just blow their Z-move on that slot, so the person that switches in just... Yeah, like, even at half defense, you know, if it's something that you're weak against, super effective, it's still just going to kill you. Or they just focus fire that slot on the turn of the Baton Pass. Or if you have a priority, like a prankster taunt, you can just taunt the Baton Pass before it goes off.
Interesting.
Like, there are answers to it. It's not a broken eye win button.
It sounds like it's not even a broken eye win button. It sounds like it's just not good.
It's a broken eye win gun against people that don't know what to do. Against people that don't have experience fighting it.
Or who just coincidentally don't have...
Or if they did not build a proper team. You could have a really good team, but if... You know, part of building a proper team is making sure you have an answer to every... Not literally everything, but every feasible thing.
That's not true. Building a proper team is about having a winning percentage against most teams.
Yeah, a winning percentage against most teams, but, you know, you want to at least have a winning strategy or winning answer for most teams, and at least a plausible, what could I do in the event of X? Like, having a team that's just, yeah, if it's extreme evo boost, I just lose. Well, what happens in that stupid, gimmicky 1-32 guy that decides to enter a tournament with extreme evo boost? Do you just hope that he gets knocked out before he gets to you?
Well, the alternative is fielding a less effective team against more common teams.
Right, and that's the beauty of Roar. I switched out Snarl, which was like kind of a support move anyways, which just lowers the enemy's special attack by one stage, which is kind of useful. The beauty of Roar is that it stops Trick Room, because Roar is negative priority. It'll always go out after the attacks, but it goes out before Trick Room. So now, if I think someone's going to Trick Room, I just Roar them, and then it just switches them out before the Trick Room goes off.
What does Trick Room do again?
Trick Room makes it so for 5 turns, the slower Pokemon attack first.
Oh.
And my team is a bit faster than most. Like, Arcanine's a somewhat above average speed. Tapu Koko's very fast. I have a Choice Scarfer in there, so, you know, Garchomp. Stopping Trick Room is beneficial to me.
Right.
And it also kind of is useful just for other cases. Like, let's say someone else is trying to set up or boost. Can just roar them out. Let's say I don't like the matchup currently. Like, oh geez, there's like a fire type and a, you know, a rock type. It's just, I can't really do much against them because I'm Arcanine. But at the same time, it's not like super pressing that I switch out. Like, I like my positioning, but I don't want to switch out. But at the same time, I can't be useful. I can just roar just to shuffle them. And sometimes it's just shuffling your enemy can put them off guard.
Right.
Like if they have an expectation. Or even, let's say they lead out with a Kartana, which is super, super weak to Arcanine. Like, the only way Kartana can win a fight against Arcanine is if Kartana carries Guillotine, the one-hit KO move, and just gambles the 30% chance. Yeah, either I one-hit KO you, or you just destroy me. I have no move that can kill you. So they lead out with Kartana.
So they get rolled the dice.
Well, yeah, that's usually Kartana run Guillotine, because if it comes down to 1v1, the only way to win is to roll the dice. One of the stupid things at PAX, they banned Guillotine. It's like they took some Smogon singles rules, and those don't really work very well in doubles. Because, like, oh, well, one-hit KO moves aren't fun. It's like, they are a completely viable part of the game. Sometimes it comes down to, I need to roll the dice. But, yeah, so you know, they lead out with Kartana. It's like, oh, geez. They have an Arcanine. I'll switch out. So, you roar the Kartana. It switches out first turn, because it's expecting to, you know, okay, I'll just switch out safely, and then, oh, there's a 50% chance. Roar just drags you back.
Right. Okay, yeah. I don't know. This is all kind of foreign to me.
It's meta.
Meta, like, yeah, meta layers that, like, I sort of understand the words and the concepts, but
basically,
I don't even know. It gives I'm more curious because we seem to talk about Pokemon all the time, and I'm just confused the whole time.
You gotta start playing Pokemon.
I do play Pokemon.
Gotta start playing.
Just not nearly. There's so many other things to play. I'm curious what else you got to do at PAX, because I'm always tied up all morning.
Yeah, so you know, usually the day of like any sort of tournament, or even like back in the day when it was a race.
What the? A race? Oh, like back when I was an actual race, not like
back when I was a cross country runner. Yeah. Before any sort of tournament, I usually just try to focus on staying in the zone. So the day on Saturday, I was like just focusing on, okay, got to prepare for this Pokemon tournament. So then after that, like it's like, all right, well, tourney's over, time to go have fun.
Yeah, so you have the exact opposite approach that I do. Like, when I have a, like, competition of any kind, the very, like, the exact thing I try to do is to not think about it at all.
Yeah, it's different ways of mentally preparing for something. In my years as a cross-country runner and going to other competitions, I found that the most effective thing I can do to mentally prepare myself is to, you know, stay focused. Not to psych myself out, but just like, alright, you know, there's going to be a tournament later, let's not eat anything weird that's going to send me to the bathroom. Let's not tire myself out. You know, stay calm. Stay focused.
So you spent your entire PAX doing nothing but this?
Saturday. And then after the tournament, that was when I went to... I went to Stefan's panel.
Yeah, how was that? His panel... Stefan is the person who runs the World Turned Upside Down.
Yes.
The Mega Game that we spoke about a few weeks back.
Several
How was that panel? It was about Mega Games, right?
It was pretty good. I mean, honestly, it was like 50% of the people there were just people from Long Island Board Games there to support Stefan.
Was it a full panel?
No, it was almost nearly empty. I mean, it was at 7:30 p.m. on a Saturday. By then, people were either getting ready for the concert or getting ready for dinner.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was you know, fun. I showed up. Got to support the team.
And so what do you talk about on the panel?
They were mostly just going over, like, ideas, like, oh, you know, if you're making a mega game, you know, are you trying to go towards the role-playing side, or more towards the, like, gameplay side, and Stefan tries to go more towards the gameplay. The guy that made the Watch the Skies mega game tends to go towards the role-play side, you know.
Yeah, I don't know, I do wish games were more upfront about whether they were more role-play or more gameplay-oriented.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like one of the things with, I don't know if they fixed it, because I know they ran it, they've run it a couple times since then, the world turned upside down, was I approached it, like, almost straight gameplay, and then, you know, it turns out I should have been doing more role-playing stuff, and we did a pivot to some role-play stuff at the end. You know, obviously, the British won because of role-playing. Like, we were behind in points, and we're like, well, let's just use our prestige tokens for role-playing, and then, oh, good roll, surprise, we won. So it's like, the first 7 hours of gameplay were completely meaningless. It came down to some role-playing in the end.
But the role-play was like, oh, we're going to send some troops over this river or something, right, you were talking about?
No, it was, we're going to have a huge propaganda campaign. So the war, like, the fighting of the troops wasn't actually the victory points. It was all about the hearts and minds of the colonists. If enough colonists supported the, you know, rebellion, they would rebel. If enough of them decided to stay loyal, they'd stay loyal. And so we used a huge propaganda campaign to get a bunch of the colonists loyal in, like, 1783. So, like, a bunch of states just did a hard pivot back to loyal to British. And then from there, it's like, oh, we're loyal to British again.
I mean, it doesn't sound like roleplay. I mean, like, running a propaganda campaign sounds like a mechanical thing.
Yeah, but there was no specific way to run a propaganda campaign. It's not like that was a intended gameplay. Like, yes, here's how you run a propaganda campaign. It was strictly just like, well, what can we do with this? Can we, like, I don't know, use propaganda to turn them for us? And it's like, yeah, sure.
Oh, so just poorly constructed is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. Like, this was not an infinitely deep game. This was a game run with, you know, game masters.
I mean, it doesn't need to be infinitely deep, right? Like, it just needs to be whenever something arrives that we don't think of, it is governed by this rule.
Yes, well, the rule comes down to you roll a d20 and the game master says, yeah, I feel like you'd need to get X to do this. Much like the actual U.S. Constitution, where any and all tiebreakers and discrepancies are just have the Senate vote on it. In The World Turned Upside Down, it's, yeah, just roll on it.
I mean, it is essentially voting. Okay, interesting. I don't know, that probably have annoyed me if I had invested all this time into, like,
yeah,
a board game, like, and then at the end it's like,
here's what
oh,
it came down
coin.
To. It's, yeah, it came down to, like, you know, for about 7 hours, we were doing really well in the military campaign, and then Washington pulled some, like, oh yeah, I use my prestige token, it just auto wins. Like, he moved a single troop into our stronghold with 14. And then it's like, yeah, I use this. I'm like, okay, so what is it, like a roll? He's like, no, I just win. I'm like, oh, okay. He just wiped out, like, an entire 7 hours worth of armies. And then he did that, like, 2 or 3 more times. And I'm like, are you serious? We don't even roll? You just win? He's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, I guess we're just gonna lose this, guys. And then, no, we just used a prestige token too, and okay, we just win. So it's like, gameplay-wise, we were winning. And then we just, for some reason, we're losing. And then for some reason, we're winning again. It was a disconnect between that. But again, that's the difference between the straight roleplay versus the, you know, versus the gameplay plus roleplay, or just the gameplay.
Yeah, I don't know.
I prefer the gameplay.
Yeah, I sort of
like. Well, I would like a mega game that was just 100%...
Which is
Euro gaming for 7 hours. But that's why I'd like a game like Twilight Imperium. But people like that.
I don't think you'd like Twilight Imperium.
I've played it.
I mean, I don't think it's bad, but I think there are better games.
I played it and enjoyed it for like 7 hours.
I mean, that game also shouldn't take you 7 hours.
Well,
how long does it take you to play Arkham Horror?
I've only played Eldritch Horror. But back to the Twilight Imperium thing, the one time we played it, it was again with Stefan, that group. Stefan was worried it was going to be too short, so he used, like, apparently it's like an expansion or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes, like, what the roll cards are, and there's one roll card that, like, get points each turn. He took that one out because he was worried, oh no, the game will be too fast with this. We got to have these nice slower cards that are designed for, like, stretching the game out. So we played for 7 hours and got next to nowhere, and everyone was just turtling up, and then people had to go, and so we didn't finish.
Yeah, that sounds like Twilight Imperium there.
Yeah. I personally would have really liked to have just kept the game set up, and then we just played every weekend for a long time, but this was not a viable option. Stefan needed his dining room table back.
Yeah, but also, if you're playing a game for 7 hours, you're probably doing it wrong.
Yeah, well, the issue was, this was everyone's first time playing, so they were playing very conservatively, and we had a set of roles that were designed around conservative play and keep the game stretched out, and so everyone just kind of turtled up.
Yeah, I'm always confused when people are playing a game for the first time and they play conservatively. It's like, when you're playing a game for the first time, you're probably not going to win, so, like, why not shoot for the fences?
So, I think it comes down to a game like, if you know a game is going to be long, like, really long, like, 7 hours long, what if 2 hours in, you do a really big thing, and that just blows up in your face? Chances are, if it's the first time you play a game, you're not going to be good enough to know how to come back. Like, it's not that you couldn't come back, but it's like, you know, it's a lot harder to come back in a game when you're still discovering the mechanics and you're not super well-versed in it.
I don't know, if someone is recommending a 7-hour board game to me, I would hope that it was at least well-designed enough that you could not be eliminated in the first 2 hours.
Well, it's not that you'd be eliminated, it's you would just be at a disadvantage.
I would call that eliminated.
Yeah, well, effectively eliminated. But again, maybe I wouldn't be effectively eliminated. Maybe, assuming I knew the exact way to play, it's like, okay, I can recover from this in one turn. But not knowing how to play, you can't. Also,
so the rules are so obtuse that you don't know how to play? If you're two hours into a game and don't know how to play, there's a different problem.
Well, it's not that you don't know how to play. Obviously, you know how to play turn to turn.
I think you're trying to defend this situation that should never occur.
I'm saying, this is a game that's balanced around the high-end player. It's not balanced around the first-timer. The first-timers will not have a good time playing Twilight Imperium. The person that's really good at the game probably has the time of their life. I can see the potential there.
So wait, you've only played this game once?
Technically half.
So because I've played it several times. And okay. It's never taken me more than 4 hours.
I basically said that. I think if we had used the base rule set, this probably would have gone, we would have completed this, and it would have been, you know, enjoyable, and we wouldn't have turtled up. And if we had used not the expansion races that had just really weird stuff, like, I had a super min-maxed race. It was, like, all warfare, and it couldn't even do science or something.
Wait, were you yellow people?
Maybe.
I don't know, it doesn't matter. Anyway, but yeah.
I remember, like, Mike, he was playing as a, like, plant race that could just hop from building, or up. Excuse me. Sorry. Nose itches. He was playing this plant race where, like, their special power was once a turn, they could just shoot out spores into space to an adjacent planet. So, like, he just kept spore shooting himself to the middle until he claimed the center and then just started turtling up, and none of us could even move or react in time until it was too late. Like, 2 turns after he did this, we're like, oh god, guys, he's closer to the center than we are, and none of us can stop him. What do?
It's like, yep. You let him do it, and you just take that or him.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, we let him do it because none of us were good enough at the game to realize what was happening until it was too late.
Yeah, hey, you know, better. You tell these stories, I can't help but think you're awful at board games.
I'm very good at board games. I'm
better
than you.
And you end up in these situations.
Yeah.
I don't know. You see anything else in PAX that was, like, new? Because there's a Monster Hunter game that doesn't actually look very good, but I'll definitely play no matter what.
I got Codenames Pictures. It's Codenames, but with, like, really weird.
Yeah. Oh, you are the worst at Codenames.
I am so good at Codenames.
You are literally...
You gave me the same hint.
Hold on.
You... No.
Literally the worst.
No, you are at least worse than me. You gave me the same hint two times in a row.
That
Never
is
give
not
your
possible
codemasters
in Codenames.
The same hint two times in a row because they need new information.
I didn't give you new information.
You could have given me more new information.
No, I could not have. In fact, I gave you the most new information. So, for context, I had given you, what was it, sitting two
yes,
as a clue?
Yes, sitting two. So
and
I picked, like,
you got
the chair
hold on, hold
and
on,
the other guy
hold
sitting.
Hold on. You picked one correctly, and then you debated over five different tiles, and then finally picking the correct one. So when it comes back to me, I say sitting four, indicating
sitting
that you
three.
Should pick the four other ones that you had debated over.
Right, I debated over four other tiles, picked one, and then you gave me sitting three next time.
Whatever,
like,
whatever the number was, it was the
I
perfect clue.
More,
because
no,
any intelligent person would go, oh, he means for me to pick these three fucking tiles.
No, any intelligent person would say, you gave me the same information again?
And yet, everyone else at the table knew immediately what I meant.
No, they didn't. They just looked at you like, oh, he's one of those vindictive codemasters where when he doesn't get his way, he just reuses the same word.
No. Everyone at the table knew exactly what I meant. No. In fact, and made fun of you for not getting it.
No.
You were so, it's so hilariously bad. Why would I give you the same,
never give your players the same
clue.
I
didn't give you the same clue. I gave you a new clue that happened to be the same word.
Never give your players the same word.
What word would you have wanted me to give you for you to guess those three tiles?
I don't know. I don't remember what they were at the time, but it was something really weird. Like, there was a rat. And it's like, well, that rat's standing, or maybe he's sitting. I don't know, he's a rat. Rats
right.
don't sit. And then it's like, well, there's a house. Presumably people sit inside the house.
And yet my clue was able to get you to guess three tiles on the second
yeah.
turn.
And, you know, I did get all three of those tiles, but it's the principle of it.
That you're wrong and are
no,
terrible at this game.
You gave me bad information.
You got three tiles based on my clue.
It does not matter.
It does matter, because the results speak for themselves.
Yeah, it would have been a lot easier if you'd just given me other tiles.
You are so bad at this game.
Worse than me. I don't give my players the same word over and over
which
again.
Which is why you lose at that game.
Yeah,
and I win.
Next time we play Codenames, I'll single word it. I'll pick one word that applies to all eight, and I'll just keep saying it over and over and over again until they get all eight.
If it's accurate, then yes, fine. Except, in the circumstance, that doesn't make any sense, because you're a crazy person.
No,
in this circumstance, you debated over a tile that I had not selected for my clue. But because you had openly suggested you might pick those tiles, I needed to indicate that your guessing could be construed as correct.
You're bad.
You are awful. Echo
I'm better than you. I'm better than you.
You're,
at Codenames.
You're really not. In any way.
I really am.
Is this why you lose all the time?
What do you mean that I lose that time? I win all the time at Codenames.
No, you don't.
Yes,
I've never seen you win.
What do you mean you've never seen me win? We played for hours once, and we were destroying everyone.
What? This never happened.
Yes,
why
not
do you
this
keep
PAX,
imagining me in
PAX.
Situations?
Not this PAX, but the previous PAX. We went to your apartment, we played Codenames a lot. That was the night we played Clue.
Yeah, the one where I won in three turns, and the one where you were shitty at Codenames. You're so bad at Codenames.
I am good at Codenames.
You know what? Anyway, don't ever play Codenames with Guy. What are we talking about next week?
You can choose not to play Codenames with me, but if you're not playing Codenames with me, you definitely shouldn't play Codenames with Dan, because Dan is bad at Codenames.
So good at Codenames. Although there was... Anyway, what are we talking about next week?
Next week on the Dan and Guy Power Hour. We discuss 1-2 Switch for the Nintendo Switch.
Wait, is 1-2 Switch a game? It's not the weird code name for the console.
Yes, 1-2 Switch is the game. It's the
okay.
game where
it's games turning on.